This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. I got the whole crew joining me today. I got Steve, as always.
Yeah, checking in, guys.
Matt?
Always ready to go for another show, guys.
Always ready to hit it. That's what I like to hear. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. The mailman, I ordered a Christmas gift off Amazon, and okay. I got a thing on my phone said delivered at 7:14 p.m. So I go to check the mailbox, and there's nothing in there. The motherfucker put my thing in another mailbox. That shit pisses me off. And these people, like, don't even get fired for this stupid shit. Have you guys ever had a package misplaced like that? This is a Christmas gift, too.
This just happened to me. So I have a condo, so if you're not home, they can't just leave it on like your condo doorstep because someone might steal it. So you get like a missed delivery slip. So you have to go to the post office to pick it up. So I had a missed delivery slip from yesterday that I went to the post office to pick it up after school today. And the lady at the post office is like, I don't have it. And I'm like, well, where is it? She's like, I don't know. She's like, call Canada Post and give them the tracking number. So it's going to be like a huge...
Dude, hit. I had that happen to me too a few months ago. They're like...
Yeah, and then you call them and they're like, well, it says delivered. I'm like, well, it wasn't delivered. And yeah. They're not helpful at all. It's just...
Dude, it's worse here. They actually, I went to the post office. They're like, we don't know where it is. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know where it is? They're like, we don't know. It's not here. It's like lost. I'm sorry, we can't do anything for you. So it was ridiculous. So what ended up happening to you?
I don't know. I'll worry about it once we're done recording this podcast.
Okay.
Basically, I'll call Canada Post, see what they say. I'm guessing it's going to kind of be what happened to you. And then you have to like open up an investigation.
Yeah. Then... I ended up driving to every post office in my town. And it was in one of my post offices. It was just sitting there. And it would have just sat there like forever, I guess, if I wasn't driven around. So maybe yours is at another post office.
Do you guys want to know what the package is?
What is it? Porn?
No, it's my needtobuildmuscle.com supplements.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm dead serious. Yeah. I'm honest.
So someone got your package there. They're gonna get big now off your.
Well, the ironic thing is that I live with all old women. Like my condo is literally all seniors. So I don't know what they would. I think this package had a Krill, a Ruthless 3D multivitamin, an N2 Guard, a Bridge, and an Ancient Strength creatine. So what they're going to be doing with, you know, krill oil, creatine, and a multivitamin, like I don't know, but yeah, so I don't know. I hopefully it's just like still in the mail guy's truck and he forgot to like drop it off at the post office or something. Hopefully that's what it ends up being. But the good thing with Need to Build Muscle is they'll reship even though it's not their fault. But anyways, yeah, let's get this actually happened to me once before about like 4 years ago. And Lindsay reshipped my package, even though it wasn't her fault at all. It was the post office who lost it. So
what a
really, really good customer service from needtobuildmuscle.com. And anyone who's ever emailed them and Lindsay's replied, they know Lindsay's a total sweetheart and she's like super helpful. But Steve, let's get into our first topic. Steve's doing another fast. I guess Steve just doesn't like eating. Steve, what's your reason besides being a weirdo for doing another 10-day fast?
Well, I really like to do these every 3 months and, for health reasons, pretty much health reasons, fat loss, you know, and then like save on grocery bills, but the energy that you experience when you're fasting, there's nothing like it because I found when I'm when I break my fast, I go back to eating food. It's like you're a slave to food. It's like you're constantly like getting hunger. You want to eat all the time. And it's like your energy levels, every time you eat a meal, your energy levels drop. But when you're fasting, your energy levels stay high like all day. And another thing that's a really good benefit for fasting when I'm fasting is I can sleep less and still have more energy during the day. Like I'm only sleeping six and a half hours during my fast. But when I'm not on my fast, I got to get like 8 hours of sleep or I'm like a zombie during the day. So, you know, just the energy level is hard to explain. I'll tell you, the more you fast, it is true. The more you fast, the easier it gets. Like this fast that I'm doing is a fucking breeze. The second and third day were hard. But since then, man, once you get to that fourth day, it is downhill. I'm on my seventh day. And I'm telling you, man, it is fucking easy. I got hungry probably twice today. I got hungry when I was watching TV. I was laying down, watching TV because you want a snack on something when you watch TV. And I got hungry like in the middle of the day, like briefly. Then I drank water and I was fine. So I woke up, no hunger pains at all. It's just, it's easy. The more you do it, the easier it's going to get. And I really think that does make you more insulin sensitive. The more you fast, the more insulin sensitive you get. Because the first time I fast, it was a 5-day fast and it was brutal the whole way. I mean, I was like crazy, crazy. The hunger was crazy. Like I wanted to eat all the time and I couldn't sleep or anything. And it just keeps getting easier the more and more I do it. I mean, I would love to do it for like 2 weeks, but I mean, I want to do this 11 days.
Steve, are you logging this fast?
No, I'm not logging the fast at all. And pictures, I actually burned myself really, really bad on my stomach. It was a second degree burn. So I had this huge, it looks like I got stabbed in my stomach. So I'm not even sure if I'm going to even put up pictures because it looks like someone literally stabbed me. It's a huge burn mark on my stomach. And it happened the day before I started my fast. I was actually cooking soup and I went to dump the soup and it fucking went all over my stomach and my shorts. Thankfully, I was wearing shorts or I would have burned like the top of my leg off.
Yeah,
so it would have been really bad, but it looks really, really bad. So I might put up pictures, but I might not. Just depends on this burn. It looks like shit right now.
Kick scars, man. I'd put them up.
So, I mean, just to update you on my number, everyone wants to know how much weight have I lost. This time, I haven't lost as much weight. I weighed myself yesterday, so 6 days. I lost 5 pounds in 6 days. The first time I did my fast, I lost 1.5 pounds a day. The second time, I lost about 1 pound, maybe a little more a day. And this time, a little less than 1 pound a day. So each time I'm doing it, I'm losing less and less weight. Because I have less and less body fat to burn off and I'm more, you know, insulin sensitive. So I know Matt, I talked to Matt last night and he had some questions for me. I know I want to get Matt to whatever questions he had.
Yeah, I wanted to know, like, because we kind of talked about this last time, but we were holding back because you were putting out your daily logs. But I think now you can kind of go through it as a whole, you know, without any worries. So go through if you can, like, kind of what you're experiencing, like as far as, you know, like the white tongue or acne or any of those like side effects that you were getting before, and just explain it to people that have never fasted what exactly you mean by it gets easier, because I know there's more to it than just being hungry and not hungry. So maybe somebody that's never done it, like explain to them what is easier now compared to that first time that you did it.
So like with the white tongue and stuff, it's way less this time. And the white tongue is your body detoxing all the shit out of it. So the fact that I've already done these fasts and I'm really getting, I think this time there's less stuff to detox. So my tongue is actually way less white. Like the first time I did the 5-day prolonged fast, my tongue was fucking white. It was crazy. Like I tried to scrape it. I couldn't even scrape the shit off. It was so white. Second time, it was not, you know, less. And then this time, it's like even more less. So each time seems to be less and less. The acne, I haven't had any acne so far. I'm not sure why that is. you know, again, it might have something to do with there's just less shit to detox out of my body. I have no idea. As far as easier, I mean, it's easier in terms of the hunger. Like, I'm not getting hungry like I was before the last few fasts. The first time I fast, it was hard to sleep. I'd go to bed hungry. I'd wake up hungry. It was brutal. I mean, the second time, I noticed I slept a lot better. Once I get to that fourth day, sleep got really good. And now it's like sleep is like rock hard. 6 hours, 6.5 hours, boom, I'm up. And it's like I have all the energy in the world. Like I go work out, it's nonstop energy. There isn't that fluctuation in energy that you get when you're normally eating. If you guys notice, like your energy goes up, down, now the energy is just up the whole day, consistent, and sleep is like rock hard.
Cool. Steve, when I come stay with you in January, hopefully you will let me eat food. Go ahead.
I will basically, when I plan to lock you in the room and just starve you for the entire 3 days just to see what happens. And I will log it for evolutionary.org.
Speaking of which, if anyone's interested in learning more about fasting, go on evolutionary.org and you can see Steve's 10-day fast where he logs it with daily photos and everything. So it's kind of like a day in the life of fasting. You can see everything he goes through. It's really, really interesting. Our second topic is Proviron. Proviron is something I really like. The nice thing about Proviron is it is one of the few oral steroids that is not liver toxic. Proviron by itself isn't going to do much, but the real benefit of Proviron is that it lowers sex hormone binding globulin. Basically, what it does is it makes any steroid that you stack with it more effective. So rather than increase the dosages of your cycle, you can just add Proviron. Proviron will lower SHBG and you will have a more effective steroid cycle. It's also great for preventing the side effect of Decadic whenever you use Deca because it's a pure DHT. Even though it's a pure DHT, it is pretty mild in the way of hair loss. Steve, you're the steroid guru. What are your thoughts on Proviron? Is it Steve Smee approved or is it Steve Smee miss?
No, I love Proviron. Another great thing about it, it's not liver toxic. So you can run it throughout your cycle.
That was the first thing I said.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to reiterate that because okay. A lot of people don't understand that. And so very low side effects. And, you know, you can basically run it throughout your cycle. You don't have to worry about issues. The interesting thing about Proviron is that, yeah, it's a DHT derivative, but it doesn't shed your hair. I haven't noticed that when I've run it. So I'm not really sure. You guys can chime in to see if it did anything to your hair, but it didn't really affect my hair. So it's a really unique compound. And it's also, a lot of people say that they'll run it with their TRT and it helps them with libido. It helps them with, you know, any type of anxiety. It helps them with erectile dysfunction. It's just an amazing compound. And a lot of people don't want to run it because, you know, it doesn't really do much in terms of muscle gain, you know? So, but when you're stacking it, it makes your stack all that much more powerful. So it's a tremendous weapon to use. If you can afford it, I would definitely run Proviron on your next cycle and just let it work its magic. I think you'll be really impressed. Matt, have you run it?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And I think a lot of you guys, I hear this question all the time. You know, my source requires me to spend $400, but I don't need anything else. That's a great time to add Proviron because you can always stack it to any cycle. So that'll help you fill up your shopping cart. With the hair loss piece, okay, hair loss, to me, it's extremely complex. And the reason I say that is because we tend to look at the more androgenic compounds like Tren and say they're bad for hair loss. But then we look at DHTs and say, well, you know, Winstrol is a DHT, it's terrible for hair loss. But at the same time, Anavar is pretty mild. Some people lose hair on testosterone. So like it's all over the place. So for me, I tend to lean towards just look at your genetics. if you are genetically prone to hair loss, it doesn't matter what you run. It's going to happen. Yeah, DECA may be more mild than Tren, but if you're prone to it and you run Proviron, if you just do a search, you'll find 50-50. Guys that say Proviron destroys their hairline and guys that say it does nothing. For me personally, I'm not prone to it. Proviron's never done anything, but I've never had any issues with increased hair loss that I've noticed per se. So I think if you're worried about hair loss, don't worry about it any more than you would any other compound. But I think it's great to add into any cycle.
I'll say one more thing about Proviron, and then Matt, I will let you introduce our next topic. So if you are getting hair loss from Proviron, the three things we talk about to prevent hair loss is, you know, using finasteride, using a good anti-hair loss shampoo, and then using Rogaine. DHTs and DHT derivatives, finasteride will be useless. So if you're getting hair loss from Proviron, using finasteride will not help you at all. The only thing you can do is use a good anti-hair loss shampoo and basically Rogaine, which is minoxidil spray. The Rogaine, Costco carries minoxidil spray as like a generic version, and it's like a third of the price. So if you're, instead of using Rogaine, go to Costco, buy the Costco brand Rogaine. It's like a third of the cost and it's the exact same thing. NeedToBuildMuscle.com makes a really good anti-hair loss shampoo. It's pretty affordable. It's like $35 and it'll last, a bottle will last you enough for your entire cycle. So those two prevention methods are your best bet. Finasteride only works when you're running testosterone and testosterone derivatives because it prevents the testosterone from converting into DHT. But if you're using something that's already a DHT like Proviron, since it's already a DHT, there's no conversion process happening. So finasteride will have no effect whatsoever. Matt, topic three, hit it.
All right. So there was a really good post on the forum the other day, basically asking what's the difference between TRT and cruising? And it's a great question because you'll see guys say, you know, I'm on TRT for 3 months. Well, that's not really, you know, the right word if that's what we're talking about. So I thought, you know what, why don't we go through it? So I'll just kind of explain what, to me, what TRT is. And then I'll leave some for, you know, Steve and Trevor to go over. So to me, TRT is the option you're left with when your body doesn't produce enough testosterone on its own. For whatever reason, there can be multiple reasons. You could have abused steroids. You can have a tumor. It can be anything. But for whatever reason, you're not able to produce enough. And I think it should always be the last option. You should always try lifestyle changes, you know, exercise, diet, sleep, reducing stress. All those things have huge impacts. And I think people underrate the impact. But if in the end, there's nothing else you can do, then you go to your doctor, you get a prescription, and you go on testosterone replacement therapy for the rest of your life. And that'll be just, you know, a once per week for most people, a once per week injection. And the goal of that is to just replace what your body would normally have made on its own. Ideally, you'd like that to be in the upper to normal levels. But, you know, the key is to really get in that normal level. And you have to follow it, you know, with blood work and do everything responsibly. So to me, that is the legit way to be on TRT. The other option is self-prescribing TRT. I know there are some countries, there's some doctors that are just not willing to do it. Or it could be, you know, maybe really expensive for whatever reason. I have no problem if you're doing it for the right reason and if you're going to do it responsibly. But just remember, it is a lifelong decision. So that's the way that I would define what TRT is. Why don't you guys hit the others?
I just want to add real quick. I know Tori wants to chime in, but really quick, you covered a lot. I noticed a trend, a lot of the younger guys, that they're running like 500 or 750 or 1,000 milligrams of testosterone a week. That's like their cruising dose. Guys, that is dangerous. You're going to put a lot of strain on your heart. We're going to talk later about the autopsies that came out. And, you know, we're going to see how enlarged these guys' hearts were, Dallas McCarver and Rich Piana. They had enlarged hearts 2-3 times normal. Running high amounts of exogenous hormones will cause enlarged hearts, will increase that. And Trevor will talk about that later too. But, you know, we get into this danger zone of thinking, well, it's okay, it's just testosterone, so I can run 500, I can run 1,000 milligrams a week, and it's not going to harm me. Yes, yes, it will. It will harm you. So you got to be smart. If you're going to run, if you're going to cruise, run a TRT dose of testosterone. That's 150 to 200 milligrams a week. That's it. Anything more, you're only straining the shit out of your heart.
I'm going to say one more thing, and then Matt, you can introduce topic number 4. TRT, the goal of TRT is to have your testosterone levels in the normal range. Like Matt said, ideally they'd be in the upper end of the normal range, but you want them in the normal range. Having your testosterone levels above the normal range for elevated periods of time is not healthy, and it puts you at significantly increased risk of developing prostate cancer. 1 in 3 men will have an issue with their prostate, and that's just regular men who are not using steroids. If you are abusing TRT and, you know, not doing TRT, but basically staying on year round, you're just asking for issues with your prostate. It's just, it's not something smart. It's not something I recommend. I mean, be smart about this, guys. This is your health. I mean, there's no first place trophy at the funeral home. Blood work is key, because some guys will need 100 milligrams per week for TRT and some guys will need 200 milligrams per week. So if you're going to self-diagnose TRT, what I would do is I would start low. I'd start with maybe 100 milligrams per week, run that for, you know, a good 8 weeks so that it can fully build up in your system. Get blood work done, and then, you know, if you're in the normal range but on the lower end, bump it up to 150. But don't just start with a crazy TRT dosage like 200 or 250, because it'll probably be more than that, more than's needed. Most guys, 150 is about the sweet spot. You know, I've seen as low as 100, I've seen as high as 200, but for, you know, 95% of people, about 150 milligrams of a long ester testosterone, like test E or test SIP, per week is what's going to be the ideal dosage for them. Matt, topic 4.
All right. So this topic is actually something I wanted to get your guys' feedback on, because this is, has to do with a friend of mine. So I got him into the gym about 3 years ago. He never worked out a day in his life. He's around, well, he just turned 40 this year. So he's had a hernia forever. And we were working out one day about a year ago and just felt a little pain, nothing crazy. And I said, you know what, like, you better get it looked at if it starts to get bad. So I ended up getting a text from him hours later that he went to the hospital because the pain was so unbearable. Well, you know, they did scans and everything, and there was actually nothing else going on, but it was just the pain of the muscles in the stomach tightening up so much that they wouldn't let the hernia kind of go back to where, you know, back inside to where it was. So long story short, he had surgery today, this morning. He's spending the night and will come home tomorrow. And I know he's going to want to get back into the gym as quickly as possible. I also know he's mature and he's not going to rush back too early. So I just wanted to get some training tips from you guys and kind of, you know, think out loud. Because a lot of people get hernias, you know, a ton of people do when you're lifting weights, especially power lifters and that. So
where was the hernia, did you say?
Yeah, so it's like right above his belly button, basically, just a couple inches above. So, I mean, so obviously the first thing I'm thinking is take your time and make sure you're fully healed. He is a golfer too, so I know he's going to want to be doing that in the summertime, but it's tough because everything you do in the gym to some degree will engage your core, you know? So obviously I would probably avoid the heavy lifts at the beginning, you know, not get into the squats and deadlifts and bench press. I'd probably do a lot of light accessory work. And, you know, like, this is kind of something I say all the time is listen to your body. So I think that's kind of my generic advice is what I'm going to give them is, you know, go light, listen to it. But I don't know if you guys have any specific exercises or any type of plans that you've ever dealt with training people.
Yeah, I actually have the same hernia that guy has. I've had it for quite a while now, and I got it from deadlifting. I was deadlifting like over 500 pounds, and I got it. And so I've kind of just left it, you know, for now. It's small, but eventually it's going to get big enough where I will need surgery for it. So I would say that, yes, I did get it from poor form and lifting too heavy. So if you are doing either, you're opening yourself up to hernias. It's not in a location that's bothering me, and it's not growing, so I'm good. But a lot of people get hernias like in the groin area and stuff, and those are really painful, and those probably need some care. When I was in high school, one of the weightlifters, he had a hernia in that spot, and he had to get it taken care of. So a lot of you young guys, it doesn't really matter your age. You can get it when you're young, you can get it when you get older. So, you know, it boils down to lifting heavy and improper form, but it's probably something as men we're going to get one day. I know a lot of people who have hernias who don't even lift weights, you know, but they may have lifted something at work, or they may have done something else in construction or something and gotten it. So it's something as men we're going to have to possibly deal with later on in life. It's kind of getting your wisdom tooth taken out.
I wouldn't say having a hernia is like getting your wisdom tooth taken out, but I see the point, Steve. With a hernia, because like Matt said, your core involves everything you do. You know, it involves really any exercise. It involves sitting. It involves standing. It involves breathing. I would really recommend finding a good sports therapist and working with him. You know, normally we kind of say, you know, most sports therapists aren't really worth the money involved, but for this situation and for a hernia in particular, I would say it probably would be worth the money, just because it's such a complex issue and you use your core for everything. I actually broke 13 ribs when I was younger, and it's a little bit different, but when you have stitches on your core, you don't realize how much you use your core until you've been through a major surgery like that. Literally sitting hurt, talking hurt, laughing hurt, like even just laughing uses your core, you know, going to the bathroom, doing number two, that uses your core. So I think a good sports therapist would really help. Our next topic is the Dallas McCarver autopsy, and in particular cardiovascular health. Steve, I know you wrote an in-depth article on the Dallas McCarver autopsy, so you can talk about that. And then I'm going to do a 5 to 10 minute segment on cardiovascular health for bodybuilders. This is a very, very important subject. This is a subject that doesn't get the credit it deserves. Cardiovascular diseases are the number one killer in North America. Anyone using steroids is at a significantly elevated risk. It's not a coincidence that 90% of bodybuilders die of some cardiovascular disease. So Steve, you hit it. I'll do my segment, and then Matt can follow up with any questions.
I mean, holy shit. I did the Rich Piana autopsy, and I did the Dallas McCarver autopsy. And I thought the Rich Piana autopsy was bad, but oh my God, looking at the Dallas McCarver autopsy, I mean, he had major, major issues. His heart was 133 grams. For someone his age, it's supposed to be under 300 grams. So we're talking almost three times the normal size. Rich Piana was 670 grams, and Rich Piana was 20 years older. He was 46. Dallas McCarver was only 26. So my gosh, this guy was abusing the shit out of steroids. Also, he was running grams of gear. We know from the blood work that they did on him, and they tested positive for steroids. He was running grams and grams of gear, testosterone and tren at minimum testosterone and tren. So, I mean, let's say he was just cruising on grams of steroids a week. Imagine what he was cycling with before his shows. I mean, this guy must have been running a huge amount of steroids. He had so much shit on him. He had heavy lungs. And then he had a thyroid carcinoma. So he had thyroid cancer, which he probably didn't even know about. And he was only 26. So my gosh, the guy was a walking time bomb. And if he didn't die, so let's say his girlfriend was there when he had his heart attack. If she was there and called 911 and they got to him quick, within, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and were able to save him, and he went to the hospital and recovered, you know, this was a disaster waiting to happen. So eventually this would have caught up to him unless he totally turned his stuff around. And I'll mention one more thing too. He also had stimulants in his system, and the toxicology report also showed he had marijuana in his system. So he was smoking marijuana, which, no, that didn't contribute to his heart attack, but the stimulants did. They do strain your heart using stimulants. So I'm guessing he took a pre-workout because he had worked out earlier that day. So he must have taken a lot of pre-workout, because when they did that after midnight, they must have did that after midnight and found that he had caffeine in his system. So caffeine only has a 6-hour half-life. So he must have taken a lot of pre-workout stimulants. So these young kids are abusing their shit out of their bodies, and it's not looking good for a lot of people who are doing the same thing.
Okay, so most people already know the basic lifestyle and dietary changes you can make to reduce your cardiovascular disease risk factors. And, you know, choosing a good diet, being physically active every day, maintaining a healthy body weight, reducing stress, limiting alcohol consumption. Most people already know that stuff. I'm going to talk about some things that aren't as well known, some key supplements that will help reduce your cardiovascular disease risk factors. And the main thing I really want to hit home is cardio. Cardio is so important for heart health. If you're bulking, if you're trying to gain muscle, this whole no cardio thing, it needs to stop. I'm not saying become a marathon runner. I'm not saying join the running room and, you know, get yourself some tights and a fanny pack. But I am saying 2 to 3 times per week, 20 to 30 minutes, hard cardio that really gets your heart rate up. Not walking on the treadmill while on your cell phone watching YouTube videos. I'm talking go on the stepper, go on the bike, go on the elliptical, do whatever you want to do, but 20 to 30 minutes hard. You should be sweating after it. Your heart rate should be up. It should be about 140 to 160. Walking on the treadmill isn't going to do anything for heart health. If you enjoy doing that, keep doing it. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying for heart health, it's not going to do anything. Now on to supplements. There's 3 key supplements I want to talk about. So number 1 is omega-3 fatty acid supplements. So we got fish oil, krill oil, and seal oil. Fish oil, that's your bread and butter. It reduces serum triglycerides, it lowers homocysteine levels, it lowers LDL cholesterol, and reduces C-reactive protein. Fish oil, just go to Costco, or you could buy it on like Amazon.com. It's not very expensive. Look for the highest EPA and DHA content per capsule. Next, krill oil. The EPA and DHA found in krill oil is primarily incorporated into phospholipids, whereas omega-3 fatty acids in fish oil are generally present as triglycerides or ethyl esters, which are not absorbed as well. Krill oil also contains a carotenoid astaxanthin. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's a powerful antioxidant which has been shown to lower cholesterol levels. Krill oil is great. It is a lot more expensive than fish oil, but you don't need as much of it. Fish oil, I would say, take around 6 grams per day. Krill oil, you'd only need about 2 grams per day. You can buy krill oil at needtobuildmuscle.com. It's pretty affordable. I've shopped around. They seem to have pretty good prices. Seal oil contains the omega-3 fatty acid DPA, which is not found in fish oil or krill oil. Fish oil and krill oil only contain EPA and DHA. Population studies show that a higher level of DPA results in lower rates of coronary heart disease risk. In addition, EPA is known for its cardiovascular benefits, but DPA is said to be 10 times more effective than EPA in healing damaged blood vessels. So fish oil, just go to Costco, 6 grams per day. Krill oil, you can buy that from needtobuildmuscle.com. You want to take around 2 grams per day. Seal oil, you can buy that from innotechnutrition.com. You want to be taking about 2 grams of that per day. So that's omega-3 fatty acid supplements. Next thing I want to talk about is fiber, in particular soluble fiber. Just get a bulk psyllium husk powder. You can get that from Amazon.com. It'll be super cheap. Psyllium husk is the highest natural food source of soluble fiber. Soluble fiber binds to cholesterol in the small intestines and prevents it from being absorbed. So soluble fiber is a great way to lower all of your cholesterol numbers. Very, very cheap, very easy to use. I would take 10 grams with your last meal of the day every single day. Last thing is antioxidants. Cohort studies consistently show that exposure to supplements containing antioxidants show good outcomes for reducing cardiovascular disease risk factors. The main antioxidants are vitamin C and E. If you're using a good multivitamin, you should be getting enough, but taking additional vitamin C and vitamin E is definitely not a bad idea. And then coenzyme Q10, you want to be making sure to supplement with the ubiquinol version, not ubiquinone. Ubiquinol is much more expensive than ubiquinone. So if the coenzyme Q10 supplement doesn't list the form, it is ubiquinone. Ubiquinol is very expensive, but you need a lower dosage. It's the reduced form. So since it's already reduced, it's absorbed almost 100% by the body. I would be taking, if you're taking it every day, 30 milligrams is all you need. If you're only going to be using it for a short period of time, like one on cycle, I would use 100 milligrams every day. So those are the three main supplements you can take to reduce your cardiovascular disease risk factors. And another big thing is watch your sodium intake. Sodium is an essential electrolyte, so don't eliminate it completely, but too much sodium is directly linked to cardiovascular diseases. Huh, that was a lot. So
I'll let Matt chime in, but I had a question for you, a couple questions, Trevor.
Okay.
Sodium, in the past podcast, you said sodium isn't bad, and then now you're saying sodium is bad.
No. I'm not saying sodium is bad. I'm not saying it's bad. Sodium is essential. It's an essential electrolyte. I'm just saying don't go crazy with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Everything in moderation.
Like, can you define what's so the recommended amount of sodium a day, like on labels? You know how some, like, let's say I'm getting vegetable broth. It says the amount of sodium, it says 22%. So if I have those numbers
mean absolutely nothing, because an athlete will need way more. Like, how much sodium you need depends on how much you're excreting. So if you're in a hot climate and you're an athlete and you're sweating a lot, you're going to need way more than that. If you're inactive, those numbers are pretty accurate. What I'm saying with sodium is, like, sodium isn't bad, but just be mindful of it. Because, like, let's say, like, a tablespoon of soy sauce, that's going to contain 1,000 milligrams of sodium, right? So just be mindful of it. If you're not eating processed foods, like if you're doing all your own meal prep, there's no sodium in any of those foods, so it's not going to be an issue. Right.
But can you be more specific? Like, if I go to a Japanese restaurant or Chinese restaurant, you know how they load up the soy sauce and the salt in their food? Is that one meal too much salt for the whole day? Or is it half the amount of salt you would say? Like, give me an example.
Again, like that's such a hard question to answer, Steve. It depends how much soy sauce they put on the rice. Like, I'm not at that restaurant. I'm not watching the chefs. But, I mean, if a tablespoon of soy sauce has about 40% of the salt requirements for an inactive person, and that chef puts on 3 tablespoons of soy sauce, then yeah, that single meal has more salt than you need for the entire day. Matt, do you have any questions?
I would say almost any restaurant meal is probably going to have more sodium than you need for an entire day, unless you're getting a salad.
That's what I was trying to say.
Like,
if you're cooking your own foods, if you're going to the grocery store and buying things like oatmeal, brown rice, vegetables, chicken breast, none of that food has sodium in it. So if you're adding sodium to your meals, that's perfectly fine. However, if you're the average consumer who's buying, you know, frozen microwave dinners, canned, you know, Chef Boyardee pasta, things like that, those have a lot of sodium to begin with. And then if you're adding condiments and salt on top of that, that's going to be the problem. Another thing is fast food. If you look at the salt content of things like McDonald's, it's insane. And the reason they do that is because salt is a preservative, right? So if they load up the food with salt, it extends the shelf life, so they can store that food for so much longer. So yeah, like, if you're your typical bodybuilder who's doing it all his own meal prep, salt's not an issue. I'm talking more about the people listening to this podcast who are just getting into a healthy lifestyle and you are still eating restaurant meals once per day. They're still, you know, buying packaged foods and things like that. For them, those are the ones who should be watching their sodium intake.
Yeah, I think, you know, I hope for a lot of people, this is a real wake-up call, because you see the way society's going, the way people are eating, everybody's getting fat, everybody's dying younger, like it's just completely headed the wrong way. And the whole Dallas McCarver thing, like the guy looked amazing. If you're not educated, you know, in this kind of lifestyle and you just see a guy like that, you think, man, that guy, like he's in great shape. Meanwhile, inside of his body, he's rotting. He's about to die like any day. It didn't matter, unfortunately, that he died the way he did that day, because he would have, you know, you hate to say it, but how long did he have left anyways with the way he was going? You know, so don't get sucked into thinking that, you know, I got to do whatever it takes. You don't. You don't need to be running grams and grams and grams of gear and living that kind of lifestyle to compete. You know, it's just not necessary. And I hope that people are starting to wake up and see that these guys are dying. You don't die. You shouldn't die at 26, especially when you look, you know, like you're somebody that's into fitness and that. It shouldn't happen. So I think, you know, everything goes in cycles. And I think we're probably due for a correction to get back to quality food and things actually being healthy and knowing what we're eating. I think we're headed that way. I really hope we are. So I hope you guys really, really listened. And, you know, there's probably a lot of questions out there. Submit them on the forum. Guys, Trevor's on there every day, and he's been doing a ton of research on this. And you can get your questions answered for free. And, you know, most of the questions every day are, you know, help me with my cycle, or, you know, what am I doing wrong in the gym? There's nothing wrong with posting up about your heart health. This is a big part of what we do. And if you want to do it forever and do this for a long time, especially you guys with kids, you know, you're worried about being there for your families, like, you know, feel free to ask. I think this stuff's very important.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. Real quick, I just want to say, look, all this could have been prevented. If he had done blood work, done blood work and seen how bad the situation was, he had cancer, he had heart disease, he had all these red flags, and he chose to ignore them. So this is why I tell people you need to be doing blood work every 3 to 4 months. You just have to be smart.
So I'm doing my master's in human nutritional sciences. I'm doing my thesis on cardiovascular diseases. I mean, I'm a walking textbook when it comes to this stuff. I'm going to have an in-depth 10 to 12 page article coming out on evolutionary.org that explains exactly what cardiovascular diseases are, what we know about them, what we know will increase your risk factors of developing cardiovascular diseases, how to prevent your risk factors for cardiovascular diseases. I'm going to talk about supplements. I'm going to talk about diet. I'm going to talk about blood work, what to get tested, how to interpret your blood work. It is going to be a complete article from A to Z. So that's going to be published in a few days on evolutionary.org. So keep your eye out for that. Our last topic is buying Christmas gifts for someone who's hard on your list. You know, for most people, that's probably going to be their girlfriend. I'm singles, so I'm going to use my mom as my example, and then we'll use Steve and then Matt. So my mom, she has a lot of money. Anything she needs, she can just buy herself. Very, very hard person to shop for. Moms in general are very hard to shop for. So I know my mom is a big tea drinker. I know that she really likes tea. Before bed every night, she has a cup of tea and reads a book. So the wild chaga tea is something we've talked about a lot on this podcast. My mom's, she's interested in health. She's interested in nutrition. She's not near as extreme as, you know, me or Steve or Matt or myself, but, she's definitely into that stuff. So I got her a bag of wild chaga tea and then a really nice bottle of unpasteurized honey, because that's something I know she would like. She can, you know, try the chaga tea. mix some honey in there, and then she could do that. So, you know, a tea set with a really nice, high quality, unpasteurized honey from a local farm here in Winnipeg. So Steve, I'll let you go, and then Matt will let you go. Say who your gift is for and what you're getting them.
That's a good idea, by the way, Trevor. My boyfriend, I actually just started dating my boyfriend, and I'm getting him, and I was kidding. My girlfriend, I asked her what she wanted. I was like, what do you want from Santa? And she basically told me she wanted a purse. Not a purse, but like a wallet. And she like showed me a picture of it. And then she said she wanted some jewelry. So I took the picture to the store, and I found the wallet, and I got that for her, and I got her a little piece of jewelry. And I'll probably get her like, you know, a gift card or something on top of that. So pretty simple. I mean, you know, nothing too extravagant, but very simple. I'm curious to hear Matt, what he's doing, because I need some more ideas.
Yeah, here's my problem. I don't know yet. I'm like a last minute shopper, and I'm getting everything online this year. The issue for me is like similar to like Trevor's mom. We don't need anything, either of us. Like if we need something throughout the year, we buy it. Typically anything we're thinking about buying, it's always for the kids anyway. And my wife's the worst. So like, I'll ask her, what do you want? Nothing. Like I get no ideas at all. And I'm like, you know, I have no clue.
Like hey, Matt, this is my advice. Cause the same thing happened to me. I asked my mom, what do you want for Christmas? And she said, I am so blessed by the Lord, Trevor. I don't need anything. Right. And you know, you ask like, okay, mom, give me a hint. Like at least like, what can I get you? And you know, she doesn't drink. So I couldn't get her a bottle of wine or something like that. So what you need to do is you kind of need to see their habits and then get ideas from that. So like, I kind of saw, okay, so my mom, she goes to the gym every morning. I could get her like gym shoes or something like that, but she wouldn't really like anything like that. So then I thought, okay, well, she's retired. So she does lots of volunteer work. You know, she does a lot of like missionary work. So I'm like, I get her like a Bible book or something like that, but I don't really know what she would like. And then I thought, okay, well, she drinks a cup of tea before bed every night. That's something I could get her. So what you need to do is you need to kind of look at your wife's daily routine and then get an idea from that. Does she like to have hot baths? You could get her like a bath set. Does she, is there like a particular author she likes? Or is there like a particular artist that, you know, she really likes? So you can maybe buy concert tickets to, you know, anything like that. Like I'm just trying to help you brainstorm ideas.
Done all these. So her birthday was in September. I did get tickets to a concert, and then we had to sell them because there was something else planned. So I'm like, well, I tried to make it a surprise. So that one sucked. And then 2 years ago, we went away on vacation and said, we're not going to get each other anything. It was our 10-year anniversary. So we went away and did a whole bunch of stuff with that. My birthday was yesterday, and I got a snowblower. So this is the kind of stuff we do. Like we just end up getting kind of the things we need. And where I run into trouble is, you guys know, and I talked about this the other day, my wife does all the Christmas shopping on Black Friday. So a lot of the time she buys herself a lot of stuff. So what I try to do, honestly, is look at and listen to some of the stuff she talks about for friends. Like, oh, that would be a good idea for her, you know, because a lot of times friends have common interests. But the best piece of advice I could give as somebody, like a guy that's been in a relationship for a long time, is right now is the worst time to be thinking about gifts. You need to think about it throughout the year, and you need to have a place where you can have notes and keep track of little things that'll pop into your head. Because, you know, if you're anywhere where it's winter time, like right now it's freezing here where I am, and it's hard for me to wrap my head around what would a gift be that she could use in the summertime, because it just doesn't come to mind right now. So throughout the year, you know, just little things that you think of, or when she says, oh, that's kind of cool, or, you know, I could use one of those. And then come Christmas time, you got some ideas.
We're at our time limit. For any of the females listening to the show, a great gift for a boyfriend, a husband, is get him a gift certificate for a haircut and a straight razor shave. Someone gave me that as a gift once, and it was awesome. I went for a haircut. I got a straight razor shave. It's something that you wouldn't think of as a gift, but it's awesome. Guys love it. Steve, Matt, do you have any final remarks before I close up the show?
I just want to say this. If it's not like a boyfriend, girlfriend type of thing, if it's just like a family member or a parent or something, and you want to get them something really cool, I think sending them like a gift basket of fruit or like cheese or something, like good quality fruit, cheese, or chocolate. And this way they get it for the holiday and they can kind of share it with their family and they'll think of you. They're like, wow. But make sure it's like a good quality, because a lot of these gift baskets are like just cheap crap. So there are companies you can research and read reviews on online. I'm not going to mention any because they don't sponsor our show, but there are some companies that I use and it's really nice and they'll really enjoy it. If it's like actually like a girl, like if you have a girlfriend, send it to their parents for Christmas. They would love that.
No, I think just the last thing for me is if you are with somebody or, you know, you have a family, I think the key is to be part of the whole thing. Like, don't just make your wife or girlfriend do everything. Don't make her do, you know, if she's going to do the shopping, you better help out with the decorating and things like that and help out with shopping for the kids or coming up with ideas. But if you're just going to sit there and do nothing and put it all on the other person, it's not going to be nearly as good. So I don't know, like we went out this weekend and cut down a Christmas tree and made it kind of like a family thing. And that's, to me, that's the fun part of it. So just be around.
Great advice, Matt. You know, being present, that's the biggest thing. When it really comes down to it, the holidays, it's about spending time with your loved ones, your friends, your family. That's what matters. The gifts, that's just icing on the cake, so to speak. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for my second co-host, Matt, this is another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Beep.